evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, July 4th, 2024. Some South Sudanese lawmakers say President Salva Kiir should not sign the controversial National Security Bill into a law.
I hope our president should not attend this bill, because these two articles, he abused a lot of things, even human rights, even freedom of space.
And a spokesperson of the South Sudan National Security says there's a limit to freedom of expression.
There's also a limitation. Parliament itself can decide, even if it's public hearing, to tell people that these ones will not be covered. So it is a mandate of the parliament.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Assembly passed a bill giving national security officers powers to detain people without an arrest warrant. Lawmakers who oppose the proposed bill are urging President Salva Kiir not to sign it. Some legislators of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition say the bill threatens democracy. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Oliver Mori Benjamin is spokesperson for the South Sudan's Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says Parliament passed the bill after a four-hour debate.
The Parliament decided to pass it by overwhelming majority of about 274 in favor and 114 against, with three abstentions. So this is a normal task of the parliament, that they always debate. And as for the agreement which is governing us, the parliament is supposed to pass its bills in consensus. But in lieu of that, then parliament divides itself by voting. So this is what happened yesterday.
Some opposition lawmakers are critical of the bill's articles 54 and 55, which give the National Security Service power to arrest and detain individuals without a warrant. SPLMIO lawmaker Chan Deng says the law is a threat to the democratic process and a way to keep the ruling Sudan's People's Liberation Movement longer in power.
The bill actually was passed by the SPLMIG, not support by the whole house, because the SPLMIO parliamentary members rejected, because we cannot prefer the grief to Barrett ourselves as a citizen and the people of South Sudan. But the technical majority of the SPLMIG have passed it, because this is for them to keep themselves in the leadership and to make threat to the citizen of South Sudan.
In February 2023, Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar agreed to scrap the law that allows the National Security Service power to arrest individuals without an arrest warrant. Lawmaker Akwar Gamar says Articles 54 and 55 will help the fragile country fight crime.
We want to allow the security service to monitor high-profile criminals. You can find some well-dressed individual who you may think are not criminals, but if you follow closely, you will find that they are criminals. This cannot be done by regular police, by the trained security personnel. So we don't want to tie the hands of security agents behind their back, but allow them to follow criminal.
SPLMIO lawmaker Albino Mawien says the National Security Service has constantly abused those powers. He called on Kiir not to endorse the bill.
I hope our president should not attend this bill, because these two articles, he abused a lot of things, even human rights, even freedom of space. We don't have. Even now, if I went out and go and have a press, they can detain me. Or if they don't detain me because I have immune, they can detain you and delete What do you have to record on me?
Human Rights Watch has repeatedly urged the South Sudanese authorities to limit NSS powers to intelligence gathering, which mandates the agency to focus on information gathering, analysis, and to advise the relevant authorities. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Still in Juba, some journalists walked out of the South Sudan's National Parliament Wednesday in protest of what they call unfair treatment by national security officers. Some civil society members say they were arrested by the national security for attending a parliamentary session. The national security denied the accusations. Dennis Logonyi reports for VOA from Kampala.
Some journalists covering South Sudan's National Assembly say they were disappointed by the actions of lawmakers on Wednesday. A journalist who prefers to be identified as Garang for fear of government reaction says a national security officer forced him to delete photos taken during a heated debate between parliamentarians.
Seriously harassing the journalists over the issues of photograph because the house was getting aggregated over the issue of the consensus to pass the national security bill, and there was noise all over. And they themselves, the national security officials, they started taking the pictures. But when we were the one now that removed our phone to take the pictures, it became a problem. And they even told us actually to delete the things and all this. So we decided to walk out like this because there's no need of us being there, and we're not allowed to do what we were supposed to do.
And as a journalist who asked to be identified as Rachel for fear of government reprisal, says journalists were locked in the media gallery room.
No one was arrested. They refused. They didn't want to open the door. So the story started. When we said we are marching out, they first refused. They started saying, open the door and let us out. We don't want to cover this story anymore. So when they saw that now we are very serious, that's when they opened the door. So we are now starting to shout.
Boboya James, an analyst at the Institute of Social Policy and Research, says unfair treatment of journalists and civil society is an attack on freedom of expression.
The spirit in which this bill was, you know, rushed to be passed has never been, you know, within the spirit of a proper conduct of parliament. And it's not actually also within the spirit of the revitalized agreement in South Sudan, including the South Sudan and the constitution as amended. We've seen members of civil society, journalists who are supposed to be covering the events, were all either harassed, intimidated, or some prevented not to take part in observing the debate in parliament.
David Kumuri, the National Security Service spokesperson, says freedom of expression has its limits.
The decision to move out is their own decision. They move out because they were told not to take photos. And I need to go back to some articles in respect to freedom of expression and freedom to access of information. Taking those photos is part of their freedom and access to information. You take the photos in order to give information based on facts within the spirit of that article. There's also limitation. Parliament itself can decide, even if it's public hearing, to tell people that these ones will not be covered. So it is a mandate of the parliament. Security agents have also their own assessment of the situation.
On Wednesday, civil society said the national security based at the National Assembly detained some of their members who wanted to attend a session on the national security bill. Kumuri says civil society should get invitations from parliament to attend any session.
Making amendment is a process, means it starts with National Constitution Amendment Committee. It's initiated and goes through National Constitution Amendment Committee. And I'm quite sure civil society is represented in that committee. Civil society is being part of the process. It's the parliament to invite civil society, not the National Security Service, to decide for the parliament to allow civil society to take part in the amendment process.
Boboya is calling on President Kiir not to sign the bill.
This bill is likely to be utilized to curtail the freedom of association, the freedom of expression, and freedom of choice of political parties that may not be wanted by those in power. So that is one of the implications that if it's not properly taken care of, that becomes an issue. And we're asking the president of South Sudan not to really sign this bill if he really have the nation at heart, because there must be a distinctive differences between the power of the police in accordance with the interim constitution and the power of national security.
The Transitional National Legislative Assembly passed the National Security Service Act 2015 Amendment Bill on Wednesday amid its protests. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Kampala.
From Kampala, we go to Torit, where some lawmakers and community leaders in eastern Equatorial State say mining companies are exploiting natural resources in some parts of the state. They are calling on the state and the national governments to monitor mining activities across the region. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
South Sudan offers many opportunities for mining and mineral development, with almost 240,000 square miles of unexplored territories. Geographical studies reveal rich deposits of major metal, precious stone, energy minerals, and industrial materials. Among them are gold, copper, zinc, lead, rare earth, uranium, magnesium, iron, marble, and diamonds. The National Ministry of Mining is developing a regulatory framework to encourage the long-term growth of the industry. Joseph Hiteng Loyaris is the Deputy Commissioner for Investment Corporation in Torit. He says national and state governments should keep an eye on mining companies operating in the state.
Real mining is taking place. The person who said there is no mining, he had it. Me who is saying there is mining, I saw it. This is the difference. There is nobody who can convince me. I do not know the meaning of exploration. And mining, you cannot explore for over 1 year unless you are exploring in a big scientific kind of study that will take you 3 or 15 years, but not natural resources.
Betty Hope Awor, the deputy speaker in the Eastern Equatoria State Legislative Assembly, says revenue from natural resources should be used for development.
Each level of the government has got the duties and responsibility regarding the distribution of the natural resources. You find that all these levels of government are supposed to exercise equality.
South Sudan signed a contract with South Africa in February to explore and transfer skills in the mining sector. Christine Nakor, a member of parliament for Kapweta East County, says communities in areas with natural resources have been ignored by the state and the national government.
Always when the company comes, they have to sit down with the community and agree they are not going to do mining minus the community, understanding with them, and write a memorandum of understanding with them, with the community, and agree what to give the community.
Louis Lobong Lojore, the governor of Eastern Equatorial State, says brokers from Juba are exploiting the country's natural resources.
But why the government has no capacity and no machine to mine? We depend on the companies. I'm truthing that most of these companies who are coming, these are brokers. We have not seen the real company that has resources to come. And they have a one reason reservation. First of all, South Sudan is facing a lot of challenges. There are people, South Sudan has been given factual in terms of their armament, etc. And so there are some companies who are afraid to come and invest.
Lobong says some companies operating in Eastern Equatorial State are taking samples of the natural resources in the area. He says South Sudan is looking for a suitable mining company with enough resources to invest in the country. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
Today is the 4th of July holiday weekend, which is also the Independence Day here in the United States. And the four-day break is expected to create new travel records. The Transportation Security Administration predicts that its officers will screen more than 3 million travelers at U.S. airports on Sunday, when people will be heading home from the holiday, breaking the record of just under 3 million set on June 23rd. Auto Club AAA predicts that holiday travel will be 5% higher than it was last summer. Of the nearly 71 million people, AAA predicts to travel at least 80 kilometers from home over the 9-day stretch that began June 27. Most of them are driving. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the cost of climate? Stay tuned for an answer to that question after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Africa could lose billions of dollars in international climate financing because of a recent government decision to extend the lives of the country's coal-burning power stations. President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration says South Africa's electricity grid could collapse if it does not carry on burning charcoal to generate power well into the future. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
It was one of the few highlights of the COP26 climate talks in Glasgow in 2021 and hailed as a blueprint for the world. The United States, European Union, the United Kingdom, France and Germany promised to give South Africa $8.5 billion to help it to stop burning coal. This fossil fuel emits harmful gases that contribute to global warming. South Africa's the seventh largest exporter of coal and one of the most coal-dependent nations on Earth. By accepting the funding to phase coal out, the South African government agreed to gradually shut its 15 coal-fired power stations by 2036, replacing them with a renewable energy sector that included wind turbines and solar farms. Africa's most industrialized country became the poster child for the global energy transition. Now, however, say activists, that poster is in tatters, with the government saying it'll keep using coal as the country's main power source, probably well beyond the agreed-upon 15-year limit. Electricity and Energy Minister Dr. Koshientjo Ramakgopa recently told reporters in Cape Town his department had no choice but to renege on its 2021 pledge.
The perennial underinvestment by municipalities in the distribution infrastructure will lead us to a situation where the infrastructure collapses. So today, as I speak to you, there are many communities that are experiencing hours in a day without electricity as a result of what they call load reduction. That is the incapacity of the distribution infrastructure to meet the demand.
The minister says the only way to meet demand for electricity in South Africa is to keep coal-burning power plants operating at high capacity. But he adds, this doesn't mean his department's plan to move toward clean energy is scrapped.
We are going to be ultra aggressive in the rollout of renewable generation capacity. We must signal to the market our intention to transition to cleaner sources. But we are going to maintain, if you like, the spine of energy generation in the country. Coal, hydro, and we know that nuclear program, the build program, we are proceeding, and the repurposing of the coal-fired power station, gas to power, is important.
Independent energy expert Clyde Mallinson says it's possible for South Africa to stick to its commitment to decommission coal power plants by 2036 and thereby to secure the funds promised by the US and others.
I actually, in this particular instance, agree with the minister that right here, right now, we shouldn't shut them down if they are still able to safely operate. But we shouldn't be looking to run them for beyond when we meant to actually finally shut them down, if that makes sense. So a slowing down of the shutdown, and then an acceleration of the shutdown where we use the time when they can produce some energy now to do what we should have been doing for the last 5 years, building replacement.
Ramakopa says his department is in talks with private energy firms aimed at concluding deals to build renewable energy projects. These contracts, he says, once they're finalized, will hopefully be enough to convince donors not to cancel the funds they promised South Africa 3 years ago. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From climate, we move to politics. The first debate of the 2024 presidential elections in the United States is in the history books. But the question 1 week later is whether President Joe Biden will remain in the race after a weak performance that has raised questions within his own party about his age and mental fitness to lead. Meanwhile, his opponent, Donald Trump, is keeping his focus on Biden's shaky performances. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti takes a look.
The optics, two elderly men sniping at each other in the first presidential debate. The overwhelming impression is that President Joe Biden at 81 stumbled and at times was difficult to understand or follow. At one point, Biden said, "I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more border patrol and more asylum officers." At which point Trump responded, "I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either." Now, U.S. Representative Lloyd Doggett of Texas is the first Democrat to state publicly that Biden should withdraw from the race. Analysts say that changes the dynamic. Thomas Schwartz, a political historian at Vanderbilt University, spoke on Zoom.
If I had to gamble now, I'd say it's 50-50 more than anything that Biden will not be on the ticket.
Not if the president has anything to do with it. He admits to aging, but points to his competitors' false debate claims.
"I don't speak as smoothly as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to. But I know what I do know. I know how to tell the truth."
However, a CNN poll shows 3 out of 4 voters say Democrats have a better chance of winning the presidency without Biden as the party's nominee. Historically, losing the first debate doesn't necessarily doom a presidency.
But what it did do is to...
In 2012, analysts say then-President Barack Obama had a weak debate performance. But then he went on to win re-election. Again, Schwartz.
"The reason for the bad first debate was in Obama's case, he just wasn't as prepared. But he the next debate came up fairly quickly, and he did very well in that. Not exactly the same thing."
In another poor debate performance.
"Pays for pay and salary, or pay and pension."
President Ronald Reagan appeared confused at age 73. John Fournier is with the American Enterprise Institute.
Was really at the first debate thought of as not performing well for his age, and came back and had a good second debate. So there's a short-term strategy to shore up the base and a longer-term strategy to really show that this was an aberration and that he is able to act more vigorously and more presidential.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump has tried to keep the focus on last week's debate.
"Joe Biden spent the entire week at Camp David resting, working, studying. He studied very hard. He studied so hard that he didn't know what the hell he was doing."
Analysts say whether President Biden steps aside depends on his support in the Democratic Party and whether there are more public calls for him to resign from the race. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
Britain is holding a general election today with polls suggesting the country is likely to elect a new leader. How might that change Britain's stance on key issues like Russia's war on Ukraine? Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
Dartford, east of London, is a bellwether constituency. Its voters have picked a candidate from the winning party of every general election since 1964, so it's a useful gauge of national feeling. There is dissatisfaction after 14 years of Conservative rule, but little enthusiasm for alternatives. 19-year-old Yasmin Nichols volunteers at a local charity.
The people of England don't actually get to decide on what is going to happen in the country.
Dartford pensioner Hilmi Hilmi agrees.
Right across the board, I don't trust any of them anymore, especially when our Prime Minister Boris Johnson lied.
Boris Johnson, who resigned following a series of scandals, including the breaking of COVID-19 lockdown rules, is one of five different Conservative prime ministers over the past eight turbulent years. Analysts say current Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is struggling to shake off that legacy. Political analyst Ursula Hackett of Royal Holloway, University of London.
The question there is the cost of living. But I also think it's a sense of scandal and sleaze.
The opposition Labour Party under Keir Starmer is some 20 percentage points ahead in most polls. But Starmer would inherit a weak economy, according to Anand Menon, Professor of International Politics at King's College London.
So one of the first big questions to face a Starmer government is going to be, how are you going to raise the money to fix our crumbling public services?
Amid Russia's war on Ukraine, conflict in the Middle East and global political uncertainty, would Starmer lead Britain in a new direction? Again, Anand Menon.
Over the two big crises of our time, Gaza and Ukraine, there's very little, if any, difference between the positions adopted by the big parties, so I don't think there'll be much of a change.
Britain's smaller parties could play a big role in deciding the outcome. The centre-left Liberal Democrats have a chance of pushing the Conservatives into third place. The anti-immigration, pro-Brexit Reform Party could also peel off right-leaning Conservative voters. Reform leader Nigel Farage has been widely criticised by other parties after saying the West provoked Russia into invading Ukraine. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And that's all we prepared for you this Thursday, July 4th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Premier Gawu by Magic System. Listening to the Magic System and the song Premier Gawu. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening and happy independence to Americans in South Sudan. If you miss this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.